17. There's no time to follow in my father's reverse footsteps, so I duck behind a broad tree and watch his progress. Steam puffs from his living lungs as he walks backward up the hill, following Owen's small prints step for step, leaving only one scent and obscuring the child-sized depressions, which would stand out in these woods in this harsh time. He gives me a concerned look, but the sound of voices, nearly on my position, chases him into the tangle of dead branches and leaves. As soon as he's on the ground, the camouflage he's wearing makes him invisible. I, on the other hand, am very visible. The moment someone walks past this tree, the pale white skin of my bare arms and face will stand out. The tree's rough bark feels good on my back as I lean against it. I roll back and forth, letting the trunk scratch and massage some tension away. Then I stand still and close my eyes. My breathing slows and grows shallow, preventing the fog of exhalation from giving away my position.
"I still don't know what she was shooting," a man says. "Ain't never seen a gun can fire that many bullets that fast, and tarnation could she shoot."
"This is why they should have never been freed," Boone says. "Didn't I tell you, Buck, trouble, all of them. Woman like that belongs stooped over in a field, not shooting up my mountain." The racism might be genuine, but I'm pretty sure it has more to do with bolstering their bruised egos. Sounds like Cassie gave them a fight they won't forget. The question is, did she survive it? I turn my attention away from the sound of their voices and to the crunch of feet in snow. There's just two of them heading back uphill. Questions compound and mix with anger. Knowing my father and younger self are watching, I point two fingers at the fallen tree and then my eyes, pulling my fingers down and closing my eyes. I hope he understands my meaning. Owen might be me, but he's still a kid, and I don't want him or myself having the emotional scars of seeing what comes next. I have no intention of killing either man, but if I'm left without a choice, I won't hesitate. And if it turns out Cassie or Levi have been killed...
"At least I got this. Pretty and deadly. Mm-hmm. Sure wish I knew what kind of bullets it takes."
Boone walks past the tree's right side, holding my handgun up, admiring its futuristic shape. The slide is locked back, the ammunition spent, no doubt fired at Cassie and Levi. He doesn't notice me until I'm in motion. He spins, wide-eyed and blood-spattered. The rifle's butt catches him in the forehead, toppling him back. He lands on the snow-covered slope and slides several feet before coming to a limp stop. His compatriot, Buck, a mountain of a man carrying a shotgun, is quicker than he looks, but not very smart. I dive behind the tree as the man wages a one-man war against its bark, like the pellets might somehow penetrate the wood and strike me. All he manages to do is create several bald spots on the tree's surface and empty a shotgun. When I hear the first useless trigger pull, I round the tree and raise the rifle. My instinct is to put a bullet in the man's head, but my intention is to capture him and Boone alive. But Buck has adjusted to the situation, swinging the shotgun like a bat, connecting with the rifle hard enough to knock it from my hands. I have a moment of concern for the rifle's welfare, afraid I've taken the heirloom from my father only to see it destroyed a few minutes later. Worry shifts from the rifle to my life when Buck swings a second time, nearly taking off my head. The shotgun slams into the tree when I duck, splintering more wood from the old oak and shattering the weapon. Had that hit my head, I'd have a shotgun-shaped indentation in my brain. The impact forces a shout of pain from Buck, but he's undeterred. While the people Boone left behind at the camp weren't fighters, this man is no stranger to action. He's shit with a shotgun, but given the thickness of his knuckles, I'm guessing Buck's weapons of choice are his fists. He takes the pain in stride, never losing focus, closing the distance again. I've fought men like this before. Powerful, indomitable. The secret to defeating them isn't matching them punch for punch, seeing who can deliver the most pain in the shortest amount of time. It's the technique perfected by Muhammad Ali, the rope-a-dope. All that muscle needs oxygen, and the more he swings and misses, the more exhausted he'll become. Sometimes it takes minutes, sometimes just 30 seconds, but the big man will eventually lack the strength to lift his own arms. That's why the best fighters find a balance between power and endurance. It's what separates the ugh! The second punch in a surprise combo strikes my arm. I stumble back, gripping the numbed limb. The man is faster than he looks. I take another step back, rethinking my strategy.
Buck smiles at me, mistaking my movement for fear, or perhaps retreat. He certainly humbled me, but I don't back down that easily. Buck peels his jacket away. It's lined with thick fur that gave him a bulked-up look. With the coat missing, I can now see that he's got the body of a fighter, not to mention a good foot on me and several extra inches of reach. What he doesn't have is training, but I'm not going to underestimate him again. Assuming he can fight as well as, if not better than me, I need to come up with a way to end this sooner than later. When in doubt, fight dirty. I don't think it will make my father proud, but we'll be alive at the end. I glance to the rifle. There's a chance I could reach it before Buck could land a punch, but then again he might crack my skull before I could lift it out of the snow. When he steps closer, cracking his knuckles, the possibility is eradicated. The only way to reach the weapon is to go through him. Matching his pace, I back away, inflating his sense of superiority while simultaneously frustrating him. When he raises his hands and waves me toward him, shouting, "Come on!" I grant his wish. I charge. He throws a punch that would likely have killed me if I hadn't slid onto my back. Snow and the steep grade carry me under his swing and toward the exposed soft spot between his legs. One good shot and the fight will be over. I kick hard, planting the sole of my foot between his legs. But the soft squish of compressing testicles is missing. All I feel through my boot is the firm resistance of barren taint. Stunned, I look up into Buck's eyes and see shame-fueled rage. I don't want to know how or why, but the man whose name suggests animal masculinity and has the body to match has been castrated. "Fuck," I mutter as his big foot rises above me and crashes down toward my face. My hands and arms scream in pain as I catch his boot. There's a moment of equilibrium, but his strength and weight overpower me. Before he can compress my face, I twist his foot hard and kick out his planted leg. He topples back, falling downhill, but he has no trouble rolling back onto his feet. I scramble up and decide to press the attack. I leap into the air, sailing toward his head thanks to my elevated position. My airborne foot will deliver the same kind of knockout kinetic energy that his punches contain, if it connects. It doesn't. Buck swats my foot aside, sending me into a chaotic tumble. If that wasn't bad enough, he grasps hold of my belt and propels me downhill. I fly out over the descending ground and careen toward a painful landing. The only things that save me from certain doom and death are the cushion of the snow and the angled terrain. Instead of coming to a sudden bone-breaking stop, I hit the ground and slide. A sapling gives me a good whack in the back of the head, but I escape the embarrassing failed attack without significant injury. Buck sets upon me as I stand, forcing me into a discombobulated defense. I do my best to duck and weave his series of quick punches, but he connects three in a row, stunning me and leaving me wide open for a haymaker that will end the fight. I can't match his strength, so I decide to fight smart. As his arm comes around toward my head, I snap a quick strike into the inside of his arm, just a few inches above his elbow. He shouts in pain as I crush a knuckle into the pressure point. The strike numbs his arm, diffusing the muscles behind his punch. But since an object in motion tends to stay in motion, his fist continues forward into my face. I'm sprawled to the ground, but spared the knockout force of Buck's punch thanks to the pressure point and rolling with the impact rather than trying to resist it.
"What'd you do to my arm?"
Buck shouts, clutching the limp arm. The pain and tingling consuming his limb will fade in seconds. I scramble to my feet, mentally preparing a series of strikes I think will end the fight. But the moment I stand, the world starts to spin and I drop back to my knees. Buck grins at my delirium and takes a step toward me, cocking back his still fully functional left fist. Then he flinches to a stop. His eyes roll back as he snaps rigid and then falls face down into the snow. My father stands behind him, clutching the shotgun he used to club Buck.
"No offense," he says, "but you were getting your ass kicked."
I laugh. I've never heard my father say anything remotely unsavory, but like many parents, the guarded language used around children fades when they're out of earshot. He reaches down a hand and yanks me to my feet. While he binds Buck's hands behind him, I trudge over to Boone, who's just coming to. Before he can push himself up, I put a knee into his back and let my weight rest on it. "I'm going to ask you some questions, and if I don't like your answers..." Motion draws my attention uphill.
Young Owen is out of hiding and watching me closely. Behind me, the mountain is lost in a cascade of shimmering light.